You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, hey. Greetings to all, and I hope you're enjoying some nice weather and green scenery now that spring's in full swing. Today on Flying the Call, I have an interview with Harmony Woods, who surprised dropped one of my favorite albums of the year so far, Graceful Rage. Definitely lives up to its name, with both grace and rage, brought forth lyrically as well as musically, through a strong dynamic range and plenty of huge moments. I'm talking to Sophia all about the album, deciding to release such a personal representation of her feelings, recording with Barty Strange, and more. But before we get into that, we have another installment of What's the Buzz with Joel Funk. As always, we're breaking down some of our favorite tracks that we've been jamming recently, but today's episode also includes a bit of discussion about the return of live events and what we're feeling about that. So stick around and enjoy. So I wanted to kind of start things off with a ripper with the song Sunny Monday by Wallace. I just really needed some positive vibes this week. So I went for, you know, Sunny Monday is kind of lives up to its name for sure. I really love like the chunky guitars and the way that it like complements Wallace's voice. And it's just like a really great, like kind of sickly sweet love song. Her vocals, I definitely get like big Sincere Engineer vibes, which is a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's literally what I was going to compare it to. When I heard it, I was like, first of all, these guitars absolutely shred. Second of all, I love the tone of this voice so much.
Yeah, and so I found out about Wallace when I was down at Launch Music Conference in Pennsylvania, and they were actually on, they have a panel where you can like submit your song and then have quote unquote judges, like the guests, the industry people kind of critique it. And Sunny Monday was one of the songs that was chosen. And I was like, oh my God, this sounds so good. Like I was immediately hooked, and thankfully they hadn't played the festival side of the conference yet. So I was able to catch them that night, and I caught them live, and it was like so good. And their most recent EP, Do You Still Love Me, is like kind of leans a little bit less on the grungy side and more into like the kind of pop punk side, a little bit more like cleaner, but it's also like really great.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive more into it, because this song was like such a great introduction to them. I can't wait to hear more from them.
Yeah, it's definitely a hit in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next song is Horny Lovesick Mess by Girl in Red. Girl in Red is a Norwegian singer-songwriter who I am like not ashamed to say I heard about because Taylor Swift like shared this album on her Instagram story. But I saw that, and of course I was like, okay, well, I'm going to listen to it eventually anyway. So I like added it to my library on Spotify. And then I was listening to another podcast I like, Las Culturistas, and they mentioned Girl in Red. And I was like, okay, well, now I have to listen to it. And she does like this really cool like take on sort of pop punk meets bedroom pop. This song in particular is like a really sick, almost like a love letter to like teenage lust, right? It's not necessarily a super sappy love song. And it's sort of critiquing the idea of like hookup culture, but not dismissing it either. It's a really fun listen, and this album as a whole is also just a very, very, very interesting take on just what pop music sounds like in 2021.
Yeah, I think like the kind of the pop structure is really interesting to me. Like it feels like one of those songs that like I think it's definitely kind of like meticulously planned out. And if it wasn't, I think it's one of those songs that could like border on like turning into like really messy and like not working at all. But because of the way that the kind of pieces all fit together, it does just work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I'm like excited to dig more into her back catalog, because I know it went like it used to be like super lo-fi. And then with this, she's just kind of not been afraid to really explore like explosive moments in her music. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I think I believe it was on this song, but there's like some of the drum parts, just like, especially like right at the start of the song and that first kind of like section before it gets to like the kind of ambient outro, they yep. just sound like really kind of like huge and like super like echoey, like big room noise.
Yeah, absolutely. She's just, I don't know. I love the direction pop music is going. Like, I'm excited to hear the influence of stuff we've been listening to like in the background for so long, bleeding into the mainstream sort of.
For sure. Next up, we got Cliff Diver with Gas City, which I don't know that it's my favorite Cliff Diver song, but it's definitely the one that like gets stuck in my head the most.
Oh, yeah. I sing this song to myself all the time. I'll be sitting at my desk literally just singing, "You need to gas up all of your homies," like all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Again, I needed those positive vibes, and this has it in spades for sure.
Yeah, and Joey's voice is so undeniable. Like, when I heard, I think it was Cameron Diaz for the first time with the big pastel music video, and like, and that mullet unfold display to at least click on it, the video. But ever since then, it's been like, I was instantly hooked, and I was like, wait to hear what this band does.
Yeah, and I mean the way they like meld the sax solos in are like so perfect, and the addition of their new singer Brianna as well is like awesome. And I mean they're currently in the studio recording their first album, and I could not be more stoked to see how that comes out.
Oh, absolutely, especially because like similar to Greg, really isn't afraid to play. So like there are moments that are pretty straightforward pop punk. But then there's moments with these huge sax solos, and they have like even like post-hardcore breakdowns on some of the stuff. So I'm excited to hear what the album as a whole sounds like.
Yeah, and Joey's been saying there's going to be more screaming than you can handle. So
I'm so excited.
Hell yeah.
Next, we've got To Some I'm Genius by Snow Ellet. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. That's how I'm going to go about purchase an EP that I like saw in passing. Christian shared a link to it again on Instagram, and then somebody at the alternative tweeted a link to the EP, and I was like, I'm gonna listen to it, right? And this is the first song off of the EP Suburban Indie Rockstar, and this song in particular, it sounds so much like similar to Oso Oso, but like with some of the bigger vibes of like Third Eye Blind and like early 2010s like warped indie rock. It's just, it gets played at my desk like twice, all the way through, like twice a day.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I really dig kind of like the jingle guitar mixed with the more like distant sounding vocals. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the song wouldn't be out of place on like the Adventures of Pete and Pete soundtrack or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't know, I always connect with like what I like to call like a muted positivity. And I think that is present in this song. Like if it was done the wrong way, it could kind of come off as conceited, but mm-hmm. it leans more into like the humble side. So it's like, yeah, it definitely feels like genuine.
Yeah, it feels almost aspirational, where it could definitely feel cocky if it was done less genuinely, I guess.
For sure. Yeah, and I think just you speaking about how you kind of got into the two picks that we've discussed from you so far really just goes to show how don't not shout about your favorite bands. Cause if like it took you two times seeing these things in two different places to be like, okay, now I gotta check it out. It's like,
yeah,
just fucking send a tweet, post on Instagram, you know, gas yeah. up your homies.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then up next is Good Friends Are Hard to Find by A Day Without Love. And I feel like this is just like such a classic example of like a songwriter song, like one that kind of makes you really appreciate what a quote unquote like basic song can be. Mm-hmm. Brian is like such a cool figure within the scene to me because, you know, over the last couple of years, he's done like a crap ton of collaborations with other artists. He put out a poetry book. He does a podcast where he's looking to speak to 1,000 people, just, you know, about what they're all about. And actually the song Good Friends Are Hard to Find was released last summer when he announced a documentary that's going to be coming out this summer, where, you know, on tour he was like interviewing all of these different people about kind of like, you know, what a safe space is and how to, you know, work towards creating more safe spaces. And yeah, I don't know. I just find like all his work super inspirational.
Nice. I did not know about the documentary at all. But the song, like the second I heard it, it felt like a movie credit song, right? Like this, all the conflict is resolved and this is playing like as the credits are scrolling. And it gives me like big Jack Johnson, like it gave me Jack Johnson and like Jason Mraz vibes, but like not in like a cringy, please turn it off, I don't want to hear it anymore way. Like in a good, like, it feels like a nice breeze, like on a spring day kind of.
For sure. Yeah. It's definitely one of those like college courtyard, like chilling out, hanging with your friends.
Exactly. It just feels nice. And it's just like, I don't know. I think we need a little bit more of that. And then I have on here, I have Favorite Band by Chloe Moriondo. I'm going to try to make this the last time for a little bit that I pick a Chloe Moriondo song. but I think that this came out last Friday is probably at this point anyway, my album of the year. Favorite Band was a song that, like, the second I got the advance for this record, I think I talked about to like at least 10 people.
And I was one of them.
The name drops in this song alone, it's very much like, I don't know if you remember Band-Aid by Gym Class Heroes, but the entirety of that song was just band name puns. And she does something similar here. And this song is super catchy. And then like every time I listen to it, I swear to God, I hear a different band name being dropped at a different point. And for a major label debut, for her to shout out Girlpool and Great Grandpa, I'm like absolutely head over heels with this song.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the Simple Plan all-time low references are something that we can all get behind, but then like those name drops, it's like, oh hell yeah, you're one of us.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like cool. We know for sure that she's not just pretending to like this shit. If she's pulling out references that like a label might not be able to force feed her.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, as with the previous songs of hers we've talked about, like it's just like this really great, clean and clear production that, yeah, you know, I don't know, it really like cuts through. I don't know. Yeah, it's very well produced and you can certainly tell that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, I can't stop gushing about that album. It's just such a cool moment for her, and I'm so excited to see how people react to it the rest of the year and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, I guess just to wrap up with a little couple pieces of music news, I got new Downhill single just came out today, which is Dried. And it's the second track on their album. And it kind of like is part of this 1-2 punch of longer songs. Like the first one's like 7 minutes and then this track's like 5 or 6. And this one is just like, I'm so excited to see people starting to hear this and then seeing how they react to the full album is just like, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it. I listened to the first single. I'm going to try to wait until the album comes out to listen to anything else, though, just because it's so close. It's like, what, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, so I think 10 days now.
I almost just want to like, I want to wait and just experience. I think I just want to hear the whole thing in one go. Yeah. After that first single, but I am excited because this will still be the first full body of work that I've listened to from Downhill.
So nice. And then we finally have a Sincere Engineer album announced, even though we have to wait till September for it.
I know. I have very rarely, like, there are a few bands that I will like jump on a pre-order the second it's announced. And I was like refreshing when I saw that they were going to be announcing something on or last week when they did. So I was very quick to pre-order Bless My Psyche, and I cannot wait to hear this whole album.
Yeah, I'm very stoked. Like the first three singles that were released being like the first three tracks is like so perfect. And yeah. I can't wait to see what else is in store, because like, you know, the first couple songs were like very much similar to Rombithian. But I feel like the last two singles that have come out, including the one that came out with the announcement of the album, kind of are showing a more broad sound that I'm really excited to hear them explore.
Yeah, Spanish love songs and like Menzinger's vibes too. So I'm like excited just to hear more fleshed out this sounds.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if it's anything like Brave Faces Everyone was last year, then
oh my god,
I'm so here for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready to be crushed. Please do it.
And then, I mean, the last kind of thing that I have is that tour announcements are back. For better or for worse.
Sad Summer was just re-announced, what, today?
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yes. So like Dane, The Story So Far, Grayscale. I think that's everybody. Maybe Mayday Parade.
And so Phish officially reannounced their tour that was postponed from last year.
Beautiful.
Motion City Soundtrack is doing their 17 years of commitments to memory.
Oh my God.
Which is okay. I mean, well, that's not till next year. So that's the reschedule of the 15 year. So I get it, but
yeah.
But if they do a 20 year, then that's going to be a little bit much.
Yeah, absolutely. They kind of that definitely put off the idea of being able to do a 20 year tour, unless like they're really trying to just milk whatever they can out of commit this to memory. But yeah, Chloe just announced her tour in support of Blood Bunny.
Beach Bunny tour selling out all over the place.
Oh, I know. Anybody else major? I guess Green Day and Fall Out Boy are still doing that tour in the summer. Yeah, they're still doing that tour in the summer, which I have tickets to, so I'm curious to see what it'll be like. Because I bought tickets when that was announced, God, late 2019, early 2020.
Yeah.
And I did like that Weezer album that they only released because of this tour. Like, Van Weezer's a fun listen, but it only exists for this tour, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where I am as far as tours go. Like, I think I have tickets to two shows, but two nights in a row to see this band Goose. And they're like pod seats in an outdoor venue. So okay. I'm like, okay, I'll probably be able to do that. If not, I can definitely sell the tickets because it ended up being like the first show that they did a lottery for because the site crashed when the pre-orders went live.
Okay.
But I don't know how I feel about full capacity shows. I think it's like I've been trying to kind of force myself to do small things that are quote unquote normal that I know are going to be like not as risky. And I'm working my way up to feeling comfortable in crowds again.
Yeah. Well, I just don't know how I'm going to feel about shows coming back either. Is it going to become a vaccine passport type deal where they're going to ask you for like a QR code? Crowds of people are already pretty scary, but like then just not knowing, like even going into the office is kind of a crapshoot. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm not going to know more than two people in this building right now. So like, yeah. I joked on a dating app today. They were like, what are you here for? And I was like, I guess to suss out if in COVID before, because like, I don't know. I don't know how to do anything social anymore with people I don't know yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm iffy on tours. I'm iffy on tours too. I don't know that I'm going to buy tickets for anything just yet. If they sell live stream tickets as well, I'll happily buy those.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope that becomes a thing, like not even just for accessibility reasons, which of course for that, but also just, I mean, like for the interim when some people are comfortable doing it, some people aren't. And then for, you know, also like scheduling wise, like some people just don't have time to go see a show.
Absolutely. Give me a live stream code and like a Vimeo link for that I can watch for like a week after the show or something.
Yeah. I mean, even if you do it, like don't announce it until after the tour wraps. So, you know, you don't have the chance of cannibalizing sales, you know, do it for a limited time, do it, you know, whatever, like however you want to do it. I feel like it's just kind of found money, especially now that everyone's like able to do it because everyone's been doing it for almost a year now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I say almost a year because I feel like it took a little while for people to get into live streams full-heartedly.
Oh yeah, they waited until they were like, okay, so shows are definitely not happening. We got to do something. But yeah, no, I'm excited.
And I think, I think Teenage Bottle Rocket is the band that, I don't know if it's just a show or a tour, but it's like a $15 ticket, but you have to bring your COVID passport. And then if you're either not vaccinated or don't have it, then it's like $1,000.
Oh my God.
And it's like going to be enforced at the door. Like you can buy them ahead of time, but
they're like there with tire irons ready to bust your kneecaps if you don't have $1,000.
Which I mean, I don't knock it. I dig it. That was The Buzz. And here's my conversation with Harmony Woods. I loved the surprise drop. I always think that like there's such a cool opportunity to kind of for fans to create like a lasting memory. Like I saw Jamie teasing a huge album coming at midnight and I was like, okay, I gotta stay up to see at least who it is. And then when I saw it was Harmony Woods, I was like, okay, I gotta listen to this right now. And I ended up live tweeting it. And like,
oh my gosh,
I just like, I think it's such a cool experience. And I'm curious, like, what was kind of like the play-by-play for the rollout on your end?
Oh yeah, for sure. So the record, it's really personal and it deals with a lot of like darker, heavier themes. And I would have felt kind of goofy, like rolling it out in a more traditional method, like teasing singles and like having, you know, blogs do like premieres and stuff. It just all seemed a bit like, I don't know, inauthentic and disingenuous and just really didn't sit right for me. And, you know, the record itself all sort of came together very like quickly and very, I guess, serendipitously. So it definitely felt like a surprise drop was the only way to do it.
And like that night, how did it kind of like roll out for you?
I was really freaking nervous, honestly. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, okay, like, are people, like, do people care? Are people going to be paying attention? Like, are people going to stay up to listen to it? I really didn't know. I honestly, like, went into it with very, very, like, low expectations. Like, the main thing I focused on was how proud I was of the record and how stoked I was to be putting it out. And, like, just that alone was enough to get me hyped so that, you know, my my satisfaction wasn't really heavily relying on how people were gonna like receive it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it completely blew me out of the water. Like, we put it out and like the minute like midnight struck, I like tweeted it out and like put it on Instagram and all that shenanigans, and like people were awake and I was getting like all these notifications and people were saying all these lovely things like super quickly, and I was just like, oh my god, this is insane, this is awesome. Like I was so stoked on it, honestly.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that I've seen you talk about before is like kind of that you have an eye for making like album oriented music because it's how you kind of consume it.
1000%. Yeah.
And like, what is it kind of about spending that like 30 or 40 minute chunk of time with a single artist that kind of like you connect to?
That's a really, really great question. I don't know. It kind of bums me out that full albums are almost seen as like this lost art form, you know, like everyone's all about singles these days. And like, I totally get it. And like, I, you know, I being like busy and like on the go a lot of the time, you know, a lot of my music consumption does rely on, you know, the algorithmic playlists and like singles and all that. But, you know, setting aside time to really just dig into a record that you love, or even to, you know, set aside time to check out like a new record, is just, it's just such a fun and rewarding experience. It's kind of like, you know, watching a movie, you know? And yeah, I really love full albums. Like ever since I was a little kid, that's been like my preferred way to listen to music, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have there been any ones that like really hit home the full album experience for you this year so far?
Ooh, the Hit Like a Girl record is absolutely stunning and gorgeous. I adore Nicole. They're one of the, you know, sweetest, most brilliant and badass and hardworking people I've met like through the scene. And I'm so happy that record is getting, you know, the recognition it deserves. It's absolutely gorgeous. Also, the Rosie Tucker record absolutely shreds as well. And yeah, those two have been pretty heavy hitters for me this year so far.
Nice. Yeah, the Hit Like a Girl one, I really love that. I mean, obviously, like with the full album drop, you're confident with Graceful Rage as like this cohesive body of work. And I mean, you mentioned kind of like how it would feel a little bit disingenuous to do that traditional rollout. I'm curious kind of what aspects of the album you feel like kind of most contribute to that connectivity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my records have always been personal to some degree. For the past two records, though, for Nothing Special and Make Yourself at Home, the way I approached writing the lyrics on those records was I didn't really want to talk about, you know, the stuff that inspired them, like straight up. I sort of took those experiences and then sort of wrote like these fictional stories and these like allegories around them. And that, funny enough, there's a song on Graceful Rage called Rittenhouse where I do something very similar, where like I take this sort of idea and I make it into this fictional story. But other than that song, every song on Graceful Rage is, you know, it's very real. It's sort of, you know, peeling off that mask and saying, okay, this is me. This is what happened. And this is how it made me feel. And maybe you'll understand and maybe you'll even be able to relate. So that was a big part of, you know, why it just felt strange to tease it for a super duper long time.
Yeah. And I mean, kind of like going off that idea of, you know, these being the most personal songs that you've released. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that idea of like, you know, songs as therapy and kind of how your relationship to the medium of songwriting, you know, changed between those styles?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been writing songs as therapy for a very, very long time. Pretty, I think about as long as I've been writing songs. But the thing is, most of those songs, you know, have not seen the light of day, because I either just, you know, didn't think they were very good, or they were just like way too personal. And I was like, okay, this is like really dark and no one can ever hear this. And the night that I wrote the song Graceful Rage, I had that exact thought. I was like, okay, that felt really good to write this. And now no one is ever going to want to hear it. And no one is going to hear it because I'm not going to put it out. So that happens. And then throughout, you know, this like 2-year period, I wrote like some similar songs that, you know, I wrote strictly as therapy. And then, you know, about halfway through 2020, well into the pandemic, I sort of had like this idea where I was like, okay, if I took a few of these songs and bundled them together and released them, is there any chance that in these lonely, really, really lonely times, is there any chance that, you know, someone would be able to connect with them and, you know, make them feel less alone, even if it's just one person? And I thought to myself, well, I mean, even if just one person is able to connect with these songs, and putting them out like will be worth it. And, you know, I've received a few messages from people like privately who've been like, hey, like this meant a lot to me and I could really relate to this. And, you know, it made me feel a bit lighter. And that feels really good, you know, to actually be able to, you know, make a difference in someone's life, even if it's just for like 30 minutes, you know, it's a really, really sick feeling.
For sure. Yeah, and was that kind of like that switch in mentality from no one's ever going to hear these songs to like, maybe these could help someone, let you release them? Was that like kind of an immediate thing, or was it kind of like a drawn out thought process for you?
Not immediate at all. It like being more honest in my music is something that I feel like I've been building up to for a while. And it definitely, that time definitely needed to pass, you know, like it wasn't like, there were definitely times where like I wrote songs that I was really proud of that I thought were really good, but then thought, okay, I'm not putting this out. And then I didn't, you know? So it's definitely a thing that, you know, took a while for me to get comfortable with. And the main motivating factor was, you know, looking outside of myself, you know, not just, you know, being plagued by, you know, my own self-consciousness, you know, and sort of thinking, okay, like art, yes, I do make art for myself for sure. But there is also that part where I do it for other people. And that was the part that, you know, I started embracing a little more.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I guess before you know, even the step of releasing it and having the world have access to it, there was kind of the mid-step of, you know, sharing it with your bandmates and sharing it with Bartiz, who produced the album. And how was that kind of process for you? Like that initial opening up?
Yeah, absolutely. So my bandmates, Josh and David, are two of my closest friends in the whole world. And they already like kind of sort of knew about the situations that inspired the record, so it wasn't really like a major surprise to them, you know. And they're two people that I trust heavily, so it wasn't at all like, it wasn't really scary to me to sort of share it with them. But you know, at first I was a little bit self-conscious sharing the songs with Bartiz, because you know, we had been like Twitter mutuals ever since like late 2019, but we really didn't know each other, you know, like we hadn't really interacted a bunch. So I was just like, okay, this person, practically a stranger, like what are they going to think of these songs? And I think they were the first like person to hear the songs that didn't really know me personally and didn't really have, you know, an inkling as to what the songs were actually about. But after I sent him the songs, the demos, he DM'd me on Twitter a little bit later and he was like, hey, like, I just want you to know that I really connect with these songs and like, I'm really like touched by them and I'm really excited about this. And I was like, oh my God, like that was so nice of him. And it definitely made me feel a little more at peace about the whole thing.
For sure. Yeah. And one of the things like I've seen you talk about is kind of that these songs kind of had their own meaning for you when you wrote them, but that you're not really quite as like interested in that anymore. Like they're now kind of, you know, the other people's, like the audience's songs to put their own meaning to. I think that's interesting because some artists seem to be like so precious with their work and kind of like the messages behind it. And I'm curious kind of where that like philosophy of letting go kind of came from for you.
Well, I feel like, you know, it's just the next step in the sort of therapeutic process, you know, first I write the song and then I release the song. But by releasing the songs, it's almost as though I'm not really carrying that burden anymore. You know, it's a very freeing thing. And then on top of that, you know, obviously I don't want to go into detail about what the songs are actually about. And that's another, you know, part of why I really love when people form their own meanings with it. Because one of my favorite things to do, like as a music listener, is to like form my own meanings to songs. Like I'll listen to a song and I'll be like, oh my God, like I can relate this to this. And then I'll like go on genius.com and then like look at the little annotations and then I'll be like, oh shit, I was way off. Oh, well, I like mine better. And I just really want like people to be able to do that kind of thing with my music, you know, minus like over explained genius annotations, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. Have there been any kind of like interpretations of any of the songs that have kind of surprised you?
Oh, that's a great question. Honestly, I'm not sure. I try to like, other than like, I mean, I see like my mentions on like social media and stuff, but I try to avoid like, you know, searching my name just because, you know, I never know what I'm going to find. But that's a really interesting thought. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah, I imagine it will probably come more into play once live shows are able to happen and people are able to kind of talk to you face to face about it.
For sure. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I mean, apart from like the lyrical themes, you know, the kind of sonic landscapes that you created, especially on Graceful Rage, are kind of really sealed the deal for me as far as making the album cohesive. And I'm curious, like, what was that kind of process like for you, you know, instrumentation wise?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So when I had that first phone call with Bartiz, the way I kind of, you know, sold my vision to him was I sort of pitched my idea, like my sonic idea as, oh my God, I'm trying to think. Oh, right. Okay. Melodrama by Lorde plus Disintegration by The Cure multiplied by the Cherry Tree EP by The National. And to sort of elaborate on that, like, I really, really wanted to make a record that was, you know, really rhythm section heavy, like a record where you could not only like hear the bass and drums, but actually feel them in your body as you're listening to it. On top of like, you know, more like poppy, like melodical arrangements, and then sort of, you know, folky, in more like folky-ish inspired, like instrumental arrangements, if that makes sense. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in, but like he perfectly like got what I was going for. And I'm just like, when we were recording in the studio, I cannot tell you how many times we were just like yelling about like how cool everything sounded. Like, I don't know. It was so fun to make.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that makes a lot of sense what you're saying. Cause like, especially the drums are like so huge.
Oh yeah.
Like, how did you kind of like go about getting those kind of massive sounds?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm not like an audio engineering person by any means. So I can't give you like the full like gear, like nerd rundown, but we recorded at the studio Bartiz works out of, which is called 38 North in Falls Church, Virginia. And they just have this massive live room. It's like huge. And they have this thing called like a drumbrella, if you will. And you can sort of like move it up and down and it changes, I guess, the amount of like space you can hear in the drums on the recording. And yeah, I don't know. We were like fortunate enough to work in this like really like wild, like fancy studio, and it ended up sounding really fucking cool.
For sure. And I mean, with pretty much all your albums at this point, I mean, you've worked with some really talented people, like, you know, Jake Ewald for the first album, then Chris Taddy, and now Bartiz. I'm curious, like, kind of just in general, like, what is the kind of role a producer play? What is that for you?
That's a really great question. It's honestly been different, like between every record. But I will say for Graceful Rage, I feel like Bartiz played more of a role than any of the people we've worked with in the past. But I feel like, you know, having that influence and having that sort of collaborative energy made the songs come out stronger, you know, because, you know, he had ideas that I, in a million years, would have never been able to think of, like really, really badass shit. Like, just to give an example, there's this guitar solo towards the end of Rittenhouse that is just, it's like it's this super wild, like almost like Southern rock country inspired solo. And we were in the studio thinking, okay, like what should we do in this part? And he just like grabs a guitar and is like, all right, wait, I have an idea. And when Bartiz says he has an idea, you know, you gotta just let him go off, you know? And he just starts ripping this insane solo. And our drummer David and I just look at each other and we're like, what the fuck? Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, Bartiz, like, I've been interviewing him since before he was Bartiz Strange, when he was doing a project called Bartiz and the Strange Fruit. And it's like been so cool to me to see like him kind of, you know, grow, not just as an artist, but also like with his production work, like being so like kind of DIY and like learning it all himself. I'm curious,
absolutely,
what were some of the kind of like things that stood out to you most about your time with him?
Whew, that's a really great question. He's very hands-on, but he's also, I feel like he's also a very like intuitive producer. Like I was saying before, like if he has an idea, he'll just go with it and like see where it takes us. And I think that intuition is really, really, really important when it comes to, you know, being a creator. I feel like, I don't know, speaking personally, I feel like I can relate, or not relate, I can rely on my intuition sometimes more heavily than like when I sit down and I look at it from a more, look at like certain like arrangements from a more like compositional point of view, like the like music theory heavy point of view, because that sort of leads to me overthinking everything, you know, which can make a song weaker in my opinion, or at least just like in my experience. So I feel like intuition is a really, really important thing to have when you're doing that kind of thing. And he has it, and it works, and it rocks.
For sure. Yeah. And I think it might've been on the Better Yet podcast, or one of the other ones that you did recently, where you're kind of talking about like continuing to find and like hone your vocal style. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Oh, absolutely. So Barty's actually, I will say, Barty's is the producer that has been most heavily involved, I guess, in my vocal performance, because he is the only producer I've worked with who was, I guess, like professionally trained vocally. He was trained by his mom, who's an opera singer. And I feel like I definitely came out of that studio a better vocalist because of him. Like in between takes, instead of just being like, oh, let's try it again, and not really like, you know, giving any notes, he would come into the booth with me and go, okay, how are you doing this? And we would figure out how to get like not only a stronger take together, but, you know, he helped me become a stronger vocalist. It was very much a, you know, teach a man to fish kind of thing, if that makes sense.
For sure. And I mean, on my very first listen through, God's Gift to Women was the one that kind of like, you know, it was like, okay, this is the jam. This is the hit. I'd love to just hear a little bit about how that one came together.
Yeah. So not to get too into specifics, basically, I was just fucking pissed. Like a good chunk of the songs on Graceful Rage, I wrote after a situation had occurred. But with that song, I wrote it like right after I had been given like this like specific information, and I was just so heated and so mad, and I just needed to get it out of my system. So I was just like, okay, fuck it. I'm going to write a really fast pop punk song. And at first I was like kind of nervous to sort of lean into, you know, the whole pop punk thing, like arrangement wise. And Barty's was the one who like pushed me to be like, let's just go for it. Like, let's just fully lean into it. And it ended up sounding fucking huge. Like the drums, especially on that song. Like I remember when we were tracking in the second verse, there's like the drum kit, but then in the second verse, we also had like a snare, like standing up on its own. And David was just like doing rolls on it, like kind of marching band style. And we just like layered it on top of the like drum kit, and it sounds so cool.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, and that song kind of kicks off the back third of the album, which I think it was one of the other writers at The Alternative who was kind of saying it seems like this year is a really big year for like the last three songs of the album. Can you talk a little bit about kind of like, I guess, those songs as like a chunk, or like, you know, the structure of the album in that way?
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of funny, I didn't really intend for this to be the case, but I kind of like to joke that it's almost as though side A is like the Graceful and then side B is the Rage.
I love that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but like, I don't know, when I was sequencing the record, the only thing I really wanted to get across was, you know, the first track and the last track both being about, you know, saying goodbye from the bullshit and moving on. Like, I definitely wanted to bookend the record in that way. And then everything in the middle, I just wanted to be just, you know, feelings and the process of letting go, and not even just letting go, but, you know, allowing yourself to feel those really, really inconvenient, messed up feelings so you can let go.
Yeah. And I mean, mentioning that the bookend, I can't, you know, peaking with the line, "You'll never hurt me again," which kind of like really feels like this rallying cry and is one of the things I'm, you know, really excited about when live shows come back, like hearing people be able to say that, you know, and have that kind of release. Can you talk a little bit about that song?
Yeah, absolutely. So that song was, that song was a lot. I didn't necessarily intend for it to be a closing track, but it was a song that I wrote like at the tail end of this, like, you know, situation that I was going through. So it did, you know, feel like a closing track, like a goodbye in a way. Like basically what happened was I had heard from this person from my past, and I could tell that, you know, it was, it felt disingenuous, you know, like they were saying all the perfect things and like checking off all the boxes that, like, you know, I had wanted to be checked for years, but it was way too late and it just didn't feel right. And it was the point where I was just like, okay, this isn't happening like ever again. Like we're done here. Like this is done. And yeah, it felt really, really good to get it out of my system, you know?
For sure. And you mentioned kind of like, you know, how you had the specific bookends of the album, but the middle was kind of just, you know, everything else nebulously. I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of like that sequencing process and kind of figuring out where everything would fit in the album.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm pretty sure I had the sequence in mind before we started recording. Sequencing is one of those things that's like kind of hard for me to talk about because it's very intuitive, you know, like I spent some time like trying out like different orders of the songs. This is like, I don't know. I said it was intuitive. It's like half intuitive, half like, I guess like, what's the word? Methodological. Sorry, I've been like studying all day. My brain is just absolute soup right now. Thank you so much. But yeah, I would like, I had the demos and I would just like play the tail end of one song and see how it would go into another song. And I wanted the record to like, you know, vary in mood, but still be cohesive in a way where it could be listened to front to back and just be like sort of this like really cathartic roller coaster ride.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, with dynamics also playing like such a huge role, how do you go about kind of like when you're during the writing process, how do those end up, you know, kind of fleshing themselves out?
Oh, for sure. So I write all the songs, just me and my acoustic guitar. And throughout that process, I'm sort of like charting out ideas of arrangements in my head. And I also focus like really heavily on like the dynamics of the song. Like I'll just be writing like the chords and like the rhythm guitar part. And I'll be like, okay, this is the quiet part. And then this is the loud part. And then this is the really loud part. And then this is the quiet part. You know what I mean? Like when I'm writing by myself, I'm sort of seeing this big picture in my head. And then once I'm finished that, I take it to my bandmates and I sort of explain to them, you know, like the graph of like how I want the song to go. And they totally get me and it ends up like working out, you know?
Nice. And then I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about, whether it's life or music or whatever else you have on your mind that you want to share.
Oh, a piece of advice. I guess, okay. So if you're like me and you grew up, you know, having struggles with mental health and you might feel like you have trouble trusting your gut, more specifically, okay, how do I know if this is my intuition or if this is my anxiety? But more often than not, there have been the times that I've like not trusted my gut have been the times where I've ended up in like pretty unfortunate situations. So I guess, what I want to say is give your gut more credit, like give yourself more credit. Like your intuition's more valuable than you may think.
That makes a lot of sense for sure.
Oh yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't hit on about the album or Harmony Woods in general that you've been really itching to get out there?
There's some cool stuff happening that I want to keep a surprise for now, but I will say this past weekend, we shot something really, really cool. The kind of thing that we haven't really done before yet as a band. And I'm really, really excited about it.
Thanks so much to Sophia for taking the time to talk and shedding some light on Graceful Rage. If you haven't listened yet, what are you doing with your life? If the talk of the music itself and how much of herself she put into it wasn't enough, the fact that No Earbuds, Barty Strange, and even Friend of the Pod Jiraiya with a t-shirt design were all involved in the release should definitely get you excited. Flying the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. Special thank you to Joel Funk for coming on for What's the Buzz, and as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FindTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at findthecallpod@gmail.com. Catch you right back here next Tuesday with another great episode.
I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.